Hello and welcome to the Jesuit Border Podcast. This podcast explores the humanitarian response along the U.S.-Mexico border from a Catholic perspective. My name is Brian Strasburger.
And I'm Joe Noya. We're with Del Camino Jesuit Border Ministries, located in the Diocese of Brownsville, Texas.
This podcast aims to humanize the migrant experience by sharing stories from our ministry and highlighting some of the amazing work that people are doing along the border and throughout the country.
The Jesuit Border Podcast is edited and produced by the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the U.S. and hosted by the Jesuit Post. Let's begin.
Vamos!
In this episode, we're going to talk about prayer.
We'll be interviewing Rafael Cortez, who is a pilot with American Airlines, but we know him best because he spends his days off joining us in migrant camps and shelters. Just about anyone who's come to visit us here in the Valley has had an experience meeting Rafael, and know that he has a heart of gold and a very deep faith. So he's a perfect person to break open the Lenten theme of prayer with us. Stay tuned for that interview, but first, we want to explore this theme of prayer. First thing I'd like to share that comes to mind is the masses that we have with unaccompanied minors in local centers here in the Valley. There's probably a dozen or so centers. We reflected on this a little bit, shared a little bit about this last week, but about a dozen or so of these centers that house unaccompanied minors who come to the U.S.-Mexico border without a parent. And so they're placed in these centers as a social worker, caseworker, figures out where they're being released to in the U.S. and make sure it's a safe environment for them to be in. So we visit those centers twice a week to visit the kids and to celebrate Mass right there with them in the centers. It's usually in kind of a cafeteria space. We put an altar cloth over a table and set it up as our altar, and the kids sit in kind of the cafeteria chairs. Well, we started this custom of bringing little slips of colored construction paper and passing them out to the kids with some pens and asking them to write their intentions for the Mass before we begin. In some ways, it was kind of just functional. You know, it gives us a little bit of time as we arrive to set up for the Mass, to get everything going. We'll put on some music, play some music, religious music that kind of helps to set the tone and the mood. And then it gives them kind of a concrete activity to do as we're getting started, to sit there and reflect a little bit, prepare themselves for Mass and think about what is it they want to pray for. Sometimes they're a little bit reluctant to write, or they're skeptical, especially if it's their first time at one of our Masses. They're not really sure what they're supposed to do. So we always just try to assure them, you know, these are going to be anonymous. This isn't something that we're going to read out loud. It doesn't need to include their name or anything identifying. All we do is give them the chance to write out their prayer intentions. What do they want to pray for? Do they want to pray for their case that they might be released? Do they want to pray for their family? Do they want to pray for someone they know who's sick that they care about? It's their chance to kind of put a prayer down onto paper. And then we collect all those prayers, we fold them up, we place them in a little basket, and then we set it on the altar during the petitions as a sign of these prayers as part of our offering up to God. While some might be reluctant to write, you know, others are just jump right in. I think about Shaylee, who's a 17-year-old girl from Venezuela, still a minor because she's under 18 years of age, and she's been in that center for 10 months. I mean, the average stay for most of the kids there is 2 to 3 weeks, and she's been there for 10 months. There's some complications in her case and where she was going to go in the United States. I don't know all the details, to be honest, but I'll tell you what, she faithfully comes to Mass every single week at the center. She always volunteers to be one of the lectors for the Mass, which sometimes is like pulling teeth, trying to get teenage kids to get up in front of everybody and do a reading, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. Exactly.
Some memories.
Yeah. You weren't the first to jump up and throw your hand up, Joe, to volunteer to read?
There had been moments of just, don't call on me. Please don't call on me.
Yep, exactly. And I see a lot of blank stares when I'm like, I just need two people to help with the readings. Blank stares, or no stares because they look down. Like, if I don't make eye contact, there's no way he'll talk to me and ask me to do it.
He can't see me if I can't see him.
Yeah. But Shaylee, she always throws her hand up right away and says, oh yeah, I'll do one of the readings, Father Brian. And you know what? After she volunteers to read, the next thing she does is always pick up that piece of paper, pick up a pen, and just start fervently writing a prayer to God. And she almost always fills up both sides of the slip of paper. I just see her kind of writing and writing and writing. Well, over time, we've accumulated a lot of these prayers, not just from Shaylee, but from all the kids in the centers as we go and celebrate Mass there twice a week. And we just were collecting them in our bag at our house, not really sure what to do with it. It just didn't feel right to drop it in the like recycling bag or something like that. You know, all these prayers from kids. Louis and I actually had the idea of making it into some sort of art display, but we're not very artistic, it turns out.
That would be like a whole thing.
Yeah. It was like, I don't know what it would be, but we would call it art and it would use these. Could somebody do that? And we couldn't. And we asked a couple of people who we think are artistic, and they're like, maybe you could come up with something. We're like, you got nothing either, dude. So we had nothing. So we recently came up with another plan. When we have a good night to sit outside our house, make a fire in our fire pit, we bring out the bag of prayer intentions. And then it becomes a time of prayer for us. So we reach a hand inside the bag, pull out one of the pieces of paper, and read that prayer out loud. Then we toss a handful of the paper slips into the fire, lifting up those prayers to God. I found it to become a really moving ritual for us. You know, I'm always moved by hearing things like the tender names which they use to address God. You know, to say things like, mi diosito, that is to say, my dear little God, or Papa Dios, Daddy God. It's remarkable to hear them also. They often lead with gratitude. I mean, I think about their situation. They're in these centers. It's not where they want to be. They're waiting to get released still from their families. And the first thing they say is, God, I just want to thank you so much for everything you've done for me, for everything that you've given me, how you've been with me every step of the journey, things like that. And then the prayers, you know, they're often attentive to other people. It's not all just about them. Help my case. Get me out of here as quickly as I can, even if they might include some part of that in the prayers, you know. But often they're super attentive to family. They might list all the people that they're praying for, who I think are often the people that they miss the most. I mean, they're the furthest they've ever been away from home. So it just becomes this beautiful ritual and routine for us to make their prayers our own and also lift them up to God.
Yeah, and I just can't help but sometimes, like, when we do that ritual, like, it's incredibly moving. And I find, like, my own heart being deeply touched by these prayers. And then think kind of like, all right, if I'm feeling this way, imagine how God feels. You know, just, like, hearing these prayers about, wow, like it has to touch God's heart. It has to.
Absolutely. And it's so moving. I mean, you look over a sea of kind of teenagers who are most of the unaccompanied minors are probably between like 14 and 17. To look over a sea of teenagers and ask them to write like a sincere prayer on a piece of paper, I don't know, like part of me is skeptical that that would go well. And yet, you know, you see the faith of these kids when you read some of these prayers, and it's so moving. And just as we're moved, so too is God moved. And God's moved by people who are moved to prayer. And, you know, the kids in the migrant shelters are some examples of it. But we have another great example that we really need to lift up, a migrant who's been in Matamoros for the past couple of months.
Yeah, his name is Isis, which in itself can be interesting.
It's spelled Isis.
It's straight up spelled Isis, yeah.
So when you hear on the news that Isis is coming to the southern border and trying to get into the United States of America, they're not wrong, but I want you to know. I want you to know.
It's complicated.
Isis is not a terrorist from the Middle East. He's actually got an incredibly moving story.
Yeah, so he's an asylum seeker from Venezuela who had also been a seminarian. And he got on the bad side of the dictatorship, and so he had to flee. And he's staying at one of the shelters we often visit in Matamoros. And over there, he has taken on the role of a prayer leader. Basically, he took the initiative and started a prayer group that meets in the evenings and shortly before masses, mainly to pray the rosary together. But then they also talk and do some other things. And one other cool thing about this has become a group where you can have Haitians and Spanish speakers being together, which doesn't always happen. And it's been this really inspiring thing to see, just the way that Isis, I should say, has been able to really kind of rally these people around for prayer.
Yeah, because, you know, a shelter, you talk about like the Haitians and the Spanish speakers, because most Haitians' first language is Haitian Creole. And even at the shelter, they kind of have different sections that are populated by Spanish speakers and populated by the Haitians. And so there are some spaces that they can share and use in common and otherwise. But what a beautiful thing to bring people together, even across language groups, obviously across countries of origin, because even in the Spanish-speaking crew, it's a variety of countries that they come from. And for them to all be gathered and united in their own organized daily gathering of prayer.
Yeah, and it's not like we put them up to this and said, hey, you know, seminary, why are you here? Why don't you, you know? No, this was his own initiative. And it was, and this also this kind of this grassroots thing of people just kind of getting behind it. And man, he's been able to enlist the help of even those of us in the U.S. side. I think of the Dominican Sisters of the Presentation, a group of sisters who join us at that shelter on Wednesdays. Well, they gave an image of Our Lady of Guadalupe along with a rosary to that group. And that's kind of been a way of kind of ornamenting the shrine that they've built up. And then we've also donated one of our Bibles to that group. And this group is going strong. And it's always inspiring to see people in great need persevering in prayer and helping each other to grow in the practice of their faith. And ESA shows this attitude that I hope we can all show, a willingness to make the most of whatever situation we find ourselves in, however good or however bad, for the greater glory of God.
Absolutely. It's been so inspiring. You know, part of our mission is to go to migrant shelters and to lead people in prayer. Let's gather around, let's celebrate Mass together. But there's a real beauty, and it's very moving when you see migrants who are staying in the shelters feeling inspired on their own to take their own initiatives to do things like this. And so this daily rosary group, I mean, every night in the evening that they gather together, and then that they gather before the Mass on the days that we come, I just think is so moving. And we always take that image of Our Lady of Guadalupe that they use and pray their rosary in front of, and we place it on our altar. And Isis is always there assisting at the altar as well. And so his involvement in our community of faith has been very moving. And that's an example of a former seminarian, but a lay person super involved in prayer and ministry. And the interview we have today fits right in line with that, because Rafael Cortez is someone who accompanies us in prayer and ministry, a layman himself, but one who is super dedicated to prayer and to living the gospel in his life. So stay tuned. Coming up next, our interview with Rafael Cortez. Delighted to welcome to the podcast today, Rafael Cortez. He's a pilot with American Airlines, but he's best known as a companion in our ministry here, or as he likes to call himself, the guy who follows the fathers in the Society of Jesus. Welcome to the podcast, Rafael.
Thank you, Father Brian.
Great to have you with us. Maybe just to get things started, why don't you just tell our listeners what it was that brought you down to the valley and how we first got connected?
We used to live in Dallas. We moved down to the valley, and through a friend of ours who was in formation, on the way down here, got an email from him saying, hey, I got two friends, just got ordained, and they're heading your way. So I said, well, just share their contact information. I'll give him a call, and we'll take it from there. So we got here within probably about a month, maybe a month and a half. I sent Father Brian an email, and he replied fairly quick. And we met, had a meeting, and we kind of like look at each other, like wondering what we're going to do. And we had no idea. And I really had no idea what I was doing down here. I really did not have an idea. About a week and a half later, we got a text from him, and he said, let's meet in the HRC, and we met. We made that my first job with the Jesuits was making sandwiches.
Just amazing how everything got started, how you arrived here basically the same timing that Louie and I did coming down here. And, you know, you, you don't want to talk, we can't talk about coincidence. We know it's providence, right? That God was at work in all of this. That you and your wife, Edna, moved down here, your daughter coaching for the golf team for the local university, and that it coincided that we could start together. And it starts with something humble, making sandwiches, right? Hundreds of sandwiches a day there at the HRC, just putting down stacks of bread and then covering them with ham and then putting some cheese on them and putting the tops and wrapping them up. And that's how it started. But so much grew from that first encounter, from us coinciding and the experiences that we had. And part of that experience was going over to Reynosa, where we saw this plaza filled with asylum seekers. This was still in the time of COVID. And so people weren't sure if they'd ever be able to get in the U.S. or how that was going to work or whatever. And so it was amazing, wasn't it, to see a Catholic community form there?
It's a lifetime experience. I don't think in my lifetime, what I got left, I will have the chance to experience that, how a community, a parish, a forms. You have few people, you have a table, you have a couple of priests, and they believe they're going to fill the place up. And every time they did it, and it was amazing. You see this bunch of tables and chairs and only one person or two. And halfway through the Mass, it was packed. When we left, when we had the last Mass at the plaza, it was a parish. We had a rosary 30 minutes before the Mass. We had a choir. We had lectors. We have a procession. It was. I will never see anything like that. If I had the chance to do that all over again, I would leave that, because that's really who we are. And that's what the Jesuits are all about. I call them the 4x4, because you have to have a special transmission to be a Jesuit. That's one of the things I learned about Jesuits, walking with them. All I do is just follow them, really. That's all I do. People say, what do you do? I don't know. But we do what we got to do. That's our responsibility as lay people. They'll let you know what they need. They'll let you know. Just follow them. And you're gonna see a lot of cool stuff.
I know you say you follow us. But, I mean, it's also like, this is also your mission, you know? And they're kind of like you're not just like a tag along, like no, like you're a part of this, like you're doing things. And I remember you telling me about a prayer that you say whenever you go into a shelter or a gathering of migrants, where you ask God to point someone out. Can you tell us a little bit about that prayer?
Those days are very special, because before I leave, after I do my warm-up in the morning, I say that prayer. So, please, Lord, put whoever you want me to meet, to whoever you want me to be part of it today, just put it in front of me. Let me recognize that person somehow. Just give me a cue. You know, I'm not the sharpest or smartest tool in the toolbox, but give me a good cue so I can go in. And I'm always behind it. When you guys are celebrating Mass, I'm always back there. Because from there, you see expressions. You see body language. You see tears. And sometimes it's just a tear. Somebody's, you know, crying. And obviously that person was touched by something you guys said, or just by a song, by part of the Mass, something that could be my cue. So now I'm focusing on that person. Sometimes it's just a glance. We just walk by each other, take a look at each other. We look at each other and it's something I can't control. Just like, how are you? I call that fishing. When I go out, when I follow you guys, I call that fishing. I'm casting. And it's really cool, because on the way back home, it's like, I'm not empty-handed today. I found somebody. I got a good catch today. And then from there, I play favorites because I can. So what I do what needs to be done. I do what I can. So that's all I do. I follow you guys. You lead me. That's it.
So this season of the podcast, we're focusing especially on Lent and helping people to accompany Lent through that experience. And an important part of Lent, of course, is it's a time of prayer. And that's really, you know, we talk about prayer, fasting, and almsgiving as some of the pillars of the Lenten season. And so I think in many ways, Raphael, you're a great example of someone who makes prayer a priority and also sharing prayer with others. And so one of the cool dynamics that's developed is the men's room at Casa del Migrante in Reynosa that has now kind of a regular prayer routine. So I wondered if you could share with our listeners the origin story of that, of how that first got started, who it was that you met, and what the guys are doing now in that shelter in terms of their own regular prayer practice.
After my very first retreat, silence retreat in 2019, the retreat was over. It was a silence retreat, and that was it. You know, it was over, and off we went. So I started searching for what next. How do I keep these retreats going? And one thing led to another. So I found this book. It just fell on my lap, and it's called Challenge. It's a great book. It changed my life, and that's how I start my day every day. One day we're in Reynosa in Casa del Migrante, and again, one of those fishing trips I had a meta connection with a guy, just my normal fishing trip. I share one of the reflections from this book, a random reflection, and he liked it so much, he said, hey, can you send me another one? And I sent another random reflection. Next thing he know, you know, he wants another one. So, well, hold on a second. Maybe I should start from the very beginning of this book. So I did. And so we started sharing every reflection from this book called Challenge. About a month later, we're going. Every day they get one reflection a day. They get back to their rooms, probably about 50 people, 50 men on that room, and they go up at 9 p.m. and lights out at 10. So from 9 to 10, they do a reflection, they read the Bible, and they get together. A couple of months after we started this, I found out that before this, it was like living on prison. It was rough. People were going to the restroom that it's in this same room and slamming the door. There was no peace. There was no quiet. There was no respect. And they've already been through a lot in their life. So, but they're still, the guard was bizarre. What I found out, it was really, all that changed. And love came back, respect came back. The one thing that really came back was their dignity. These people have gone through a lot. Unless you come here and see, it's going to be hard to understand all the suffering they've been through. And it was really cool that through something St. Ignatius wrote almost 500 years ago, it's still as effective today as what he had in mind.
These exercises have clearly made a strong impact on you. And they've clearly made a strong impact on the people of that community. But what about these exercises? Like, what is it? What are the fruits of these prayers, these reflections? What is it about them that is speaking to these people that is drawing out of them? What are the graces they're finding?
They have, their patience has increased. They have, and this is real cool because you talk to them and it's really, it's just amazing. They have, without them knowing what principle and foundation is, they have discovered that and they're living it. If I go ask them, you know what the principle and foundation is? Nope. But they're sharing their talents with other people. They know they have a purpose. There's a reason why they're in Casa del Migrante. And they, on Sundays, they cook for everybody. They feel they belong, and there's a purpose and a reason. And first of all, they pray, and they ask God for guidance and patience. They might not know what principle and foundation is, but they're living it.
For some of our listeners who might not know, what do you mean when you say principle and foundation?
What are we created for? What are we in this world for? We're here to praise and serve the Lord. That's it. By definition. It's a very, very short definition. Good luck fulfilling that definition. Because you pray and you serve. And once you learn to combine both, then you understand a lot of Jesuit terms, contemplation and action. Yeah, you got to pray so you can really do all the things you need to do. And that's what we do. We do what we got to do.
You have done a lot of praying with and serving in migrant shelters, accompanying us in other ways. You also love to play favorites, as you yourself will admit. And I think it's hard to dispute who your number one absolute favorite is. And that's a young migrant boy named Eric. And so I wonder if you could tell us about when you first met Eric and how that was, and you know, how you've stayed in touch with him since he's entered the U.S.
Eric, wow. He was 7 when we met him. You guys met him first, and that one day we went to Reynosa, to the plaza. I saw this little kid just, oh my God, it was just awesome. And he was saying hi to you, and he was hugging you, and because he knew you, and he knew Father Louis, and it was just great, this little kid, but I was not getting any hugs. I was like, well, that's not fair.
Where's my hug?
But,
you hug me now.
But then I see how it is, so okay. And then, I don't know, he gave me that one hug, and that was enough. It's like, all right, fathers, I'm sorry, but I'm taking this kid with me. So I met his mom, his dad, and it was, found out what the needs were, you know, I was sneaking little toys for him. You know, there was a bunch of kids, so I had to be careful, sneak little toys. And it was funny because every time I went, he gave me this beautiful hug. Eric has a little speech impediment, but he spoke very loud when he gave you a hug. The way he hugs is just amazing. It's that one hug that keeps you coming back to him. He's very grateful. He's just amazing. Amazing kid. Really good with numbers, really good with math. It was funny. He pulls me aside and he wanted two things. He wanted a remote control car and a cell phone. So it's like, well, I don't know about the cell phone. But let me see what I can do. So I remember Father Louis' parents were visiting. And so I pull his dad aside. Say, hey, man, I got this. I got this remote control. And I gave it to him so he can give it to Eric. And as soon as he gave it to little Eric, Eric gave him a hug, and I saw Father Louis' dad. He just melt. He just melt with this little hug. So he put together the car, the little remote control car, put it together, and it was great. So he got to experience the hug from Eric. That's 2 years ago. He's in Detroit now. He's going to school in Detroit. Everything's cool. He still got his remote control cars and a skateboard, all the stuff. So he's happy. He's growing. He's starting to text.
Yeah, there was a time that they were living in Houston, and his birthday came up, and you talked to his mom about what were they going to do for the birthday, and what did she say, and how did you respond?
They just moved from Detroit back down to Houston, and things were a little tight, and it was his birthday, so I just sent a text, see what they were going to do for his birthday. I was thinking about maybe visiting and just a little surprise, and then she said that there was no birthday. There was no birthday, and things were not, it was not going to happen. He was not going to have a birthday, and that was just the wrong answer for me. So I said, "Let me correct you with this. There will be a birthday. I just need somehow to send you some stuff." So we got together, and little Eric had a great birthday. There was a birthday cake, balloons, gifts. He had a birthday. And that was his eighth. So he had a birthday. And then about the following week, I pay a visit, surprise visit. And man, we went to McDonald's. That was his thing. And he was lost. There was one moment that really was really, really touching. We're in McDonald's, and he's looking at this board to order. And he's looking, and he's looking, and he's trying to find... he's trying to find something. Then he turns to his mom and said, "Mom, what's the cheapest thing to order?" And I heard that. I said, "Again, that's a wrong answer. Today's your birthday. It's anything you want, you touch, you get, and we're going to have a great lunch today." My God, we order everything. We have more food to go than I could imagine. So, we had a great lunch and a lot of boxes to go. From there, we had a little surprise. We went to this racing place, a go-karts place, and we got on the go-karts, and it was lap after lap after lap, and it was fun.
Yeah, looking at the videos of it, I couldn't tell who was having more fun, Eric or you.
it brought me back to my childhood, and it was definitely, I don't know, man, I enjoyed it. I think we both had a birthday that day, because I felt alive. I feel... it was like hanging with Jesus when he was 80 years old. It was cool. It was cool. Jesus was young too.
These are powerful images of like the child Jesus. And there are so many different images as well of seeing and thinking about heaven. So I'm curious, what is a way of seeing heaven that speaks to you? How do you imagine heaven?
I don't think I've ever imagined that far ahead on my life. Because I guess I'm a little busy on Earth. I haven't had time to really... focus on that, on what some people might call the price. I don't need a price to do what I do. I really don't. What I do it for love. There's no, I don't need a reward. I don't. I really don't. I don't need a reward. I do it because because the gratitude, the joy that you receive from doing some good, something, that's a reward. It's on the spot.
You know, I'm hearing you say this, and like if I'm a betting man, you know, on this whole heaven thing, I would kind of think that, because if I hear you saying now that you do it for love, you know, and I would bet that when you go to heaven, it's going to be the Trinity repeating those words right back to you and telling you that you did it for love.
Wow.
You know, Raphael, you are so dedicated to service and to serving others. Serve, of course, is in ancient Greek is the root word diakona. What is it? Diakona, right? Which is the root word of a word we use today that is deacon.
Oh, wow. So, wouldn't it? Yeah, yeah,
interesting. Yeah, interesting.
Okay, so, I've heard that word.
Yeah, so deacon it comes from this root that means to serve and to service. So I'm just kind of dropping that in here maybe at the end of this interview. Just putting it out into the ether, you know. Wow, isn't that crazy? I don't know. So let me get you that application. And, I'm just going to forward you a couple of links. And so for our listeners, it's kind of an ongoing joke that I tease Raphael about being a deacon. Not so much teasing, but also, you know, joking about it, but also offering him to consider discerning that as a possibility maybe for his future life. So, of course, I had to sneak it onto this podcast just to get it in there. But obviously, you know, you don't need to be ordained a deacon to do the great service that you do, Raphael. And so we appreciate all that you shared, all that you do, how you continue to accompany us. And we thank you especially for joining us for this episode of the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you guys for allowing me to serve.
Well, that wraps up our episode for this week. We're grateful to Raphael Cortez for joining us.
Remember to subscribe to this podcast to hear more about the U.S.-Mexico border from a Catholic perspective. You can visit our website at delcamino.org.
If you're curious about Jesuit life or know someone who is, visit beajesuit.org to learn more about a religious vocation to the Society of Jesus.
This podcast is edited and produced by the Jesuit Conference of Canada and the U.S. and hosted by the Jesuit Post.
We'll see you next time on the Jesuit Border Podcast.
Que Dios os bendiga.